You can try to get it right, or you can try to change the world through your art. It's not art until it influences someone. And it's not art if it's sloppy either. In order to make art, sometimes you have to give up on perfection, because perfection is more about your ego, and art is more about being vulnerable. Finding the balance is your quest. Welcome back to Accelerando. My name is Paula Tuttle, and today we're exploring the mindset of live performance. Quakers always incorporate a mistake into their quilts. They aren't allowed to be perfect, at least not in their quilts. And let's take that idea and say that to make art is to be human, and it has to have flaws. It also begs the question, do audiences really want to see a perfect performance with no expression? People continue to come to live performances because of the connection to their fellow man. They're not trained animals. People go to the circus for that. On one hand, people want to feel like if they tried, they could do what the artist is doing. It's kind of the inspiration and the dream that fuels so many concerts and TV shows, like The Voice, Baking Wars, Survivor. What makes them fun is imagining yourself doing the baking, the singing, and the surviving. The other part is watching the protagonist struggle. We are really a voyeuristic society in that way. Whether it's a sports event, a TV show, or a concert, the audience has a role and it's half of the event. Watching in person is best, something the TV can't match. And attending a concert of any kind is a privilege because in person, you feel connected to the people around you, people on the stage and the people running the show. We're all in it together. When you first see an artist walk on stage, you connect with them right away and you feel their vulnerability. The artist isn't sure how the concert's going to go because there is an unknown. And that's what makes it so exciting. You hear things like, the audience went wild, or the crowd felt the tension. You can feel the tension in your living room, true, but it isn't the same thing as being in a concert hall or a stadium. And that's why people pay so much for tickets. A shared experience seems to increase the excitement. Saying that you're at the Super Bowl or at the US Open, or whether you're going to Wimbledon, I'm going to Star Lake this weekend, it really makes you feel like you accomplished something. This summer, I'm teaching a group of young musicians at Carnegie Mellon University. I've been teaching this seminar for about 5 years, and I always get the question, when do I stop getting nervous? It's actually a really good question, and you think of their perspective of looking at the artist walking out on stage. They think that artist isn't nervous, but as you become more experienced with performing, you start seeing the artist walking out on stage differently. You see their experience, but you sense their nerves, albeit indiscernible to some people. Nerves are part of the performance. You might even say it makes it better. There's a book that came out a few years back that became really popular in some music circles by Tim Galway. It's called The Inner Game of Tennis. And what this book tells us is that the tennis player has to figure out what he's doing at home in private so that he can do the same thing when he's in front of a crowd, because the crowd changes everything. So the concerto soloist needs to do the exact same thing. Think about what you do in private before you get on the stage. So the thing everybody just loves about this book is that the author deconstructs the way a tennis player needs to think under pressure so that he can do the same thing that he learned to do at home. And he also tells us what a state of flow looks like for a tennis player. For a tennis player in the state of flow, he can see the seams on the tennis ball as it's flying at him and spinning. And I remember Pete Sampras saying exactly this in an interview after he won a big tennis championship. He said that the ball was as big as a beach ball and he just couldn't miss. So musicians can get into this exact same state of mind, but the pressure is a big component. When there are high stakes, people can perform at very high levels. And sometimes, and eventually more often than not, it's higher than without the pressure. So I've been a fan of Andre Agassi for decades, and a lot of people are. Some people say it's because the audience can really live what he's going through. His performances are dramatic, and we start to care about the struggle he's going through right before our eyes. I think that's partly why I became a fan too. And I don't do sports very much, but I seem to connect with some.
When people saw me go from 141 in the world back to number one, they saw me climb Mount Everest. They didn't understand that I was starting at the bottom of the Grand Canyon.
For some of us, pressure is a kind of addiction. It's from the endorphins you produce during or after a performance. Adrenaline starts the process. Adrenaline comes from nerves. The endorphins come later, after the concert is over, or maybe during the concert, if you're lucky. Not everyone gets to this level, anticipating the high they get from the performance. But I think this is where you want to live. Think about the performer walking out on stage. Let's say someone who has 10 years of performing in front of large crowds, someone who knows success, someone like Pete Sampras, who's seen what flow looks like on a pretty regular basis. What's going through his mind? Maybe he has a ritual he does to get to where he wants to be. Mentally, he's putting certain things in his mind, or maybe he's just thinking about the high that comes from the excitement. But there's always the factor of the unknown and the possibility of mistake that makes them stay on their toes and keeps them from being relaxed. Not that many people get to this point where they can recreate flow by having a set of rituals before a performance, but we can start to try. Something most musicians can relate to is this. During a performance, we detect every nuance. For some, it's the slightest mistakes that seem magnified. And when we listen to the recording the next day, or maybe much later, sometimes those mistakes are negligible and not noticeable in the context of the whole audience. It's definitely important to have a clean performance, but watching the performer get into flow is the real show. That's what brings your audience. Being human is just as much a part of the performance as all your practice, and being perfect isn't why they came. Horowitz always performed at 4 p.m., and he always ate the same meal at noon. He knew that 4 p.m. was when he wanted to play. And when you're Horowitz, you get to dictate the terms. And I can't think of anyone else who got to do this. I did once hear Jonas Starker say that some people can't play well at 8 p.m. And I was wondering if he was talking about himself. He said, if you're at your best at 11 a.m. or 4 p.m., what do you do? Artists and athletes don't have the luxury of picking the time they play, unless you're Horowitz. So I hope you find your ritual, your peak time, and eventually your path to flow. It's the rewards of being a performer. Thanks for listening. See you next time.